Now, the thing about the environment sector and the daunting prospect of putting on something as called careers in the environment and renewable energy is that it's incredibly broad. I imagine some of you are scientists thinking about going into technical careers within this sector, perhaps renewable energy technology. Others of you might be in social sciences, perhaps thinking about going into environmental policy, environmental litigation. So really, the range of careers in this sector is incredibly broad. It's also a sector in which you need to think not just what would I like to be doing, but in what sort of organisation would I like to be doing that. Pretty much anything goes. There are opportunities in massive multinational corporations. There are other opportunities in very small, very specialist organisations, which might just be a handful of people. You might be in the private sector, you might be in the public sector, you might work for an NGO, you might work for a charity. So am I getting across the difficulty of putting on a talk like this, effectively enough? So before we hand over to the speakers, Claire's going to just give you a quick run through where you can find out other things.
Okay, so I don't know how many of you have been around the information room upstairs, but some of the materials we've brought down include the career briefings, one on the environmental work and one on the energy sector. Now those are written in-house, and we update them every year. They are available on our website as PDFs, but they will really point you to the most relevant resources that are available upstairs, as well as obvious links on the internet as well. On top of that, have many of you come across the Prospects website, which is listed on the briefing, so you don't need to take notes. But they have industry insights and occupational profiles, which are absolutely superb about just giving you a basic introduction about what the work involves for different job titles, and tips on getting into that sector, and then where vacancies are advertised amongst other things. So a really good starting point. And we've got a copy of the Energy Directory, which is really environmental consultants. There is an online version, which is one I tend to use, but if you just brought the paper copy down here, and Rob, you may actually talk about that as well in your job search.
Can do.
Whether it's useful for you or not.
Yes, definitely.
So certainly for environmental consultants, that's really the Bible for that sector. And then there's just a careers in renewable energy website, which I think is listed on the briefing as well.
So these are just two that we've picked out as particularly useful websites for the environment sector and for the renewable sector. There are many, many more. You know, you just put environmental careers into Google and the list is bewildering. So what these career briefings do is we've gone through and selected the ones that we think are the most useful. And they're just two that we're highlighting in particular, but there are lots more.
So you may find that you actually want to have a discussion with a careers advisor, and you can either make an appointment online through Career Connect, or you can drop in to the career service where you just sign up on a sheet and wait your turn. And basically the whole environmental sector is split with Abby dealing with environmental management, protection and energy, whilst I deal more on the conservation side. But if you go onto our website, you can find out what days we are on duty if you want to see the results. And of course, part of it, you may be just wanting to talk through what are your chances of getting into the field, something you may be thinking about post-grad study or not already doing that. And the one thing about the environment, there are so many MSc courses out there, and you need to be quite discerning as to which ones you look at. And that's really where you need to be talking to employers and get their view and their opinion and advice about, if you're going to do post-grad study, what would be the best course to help you get into that. Enough from us, because really the main reason we're here is to hear from our speakers. And if each of you speak first, and then we'll have some questions and answers straight away before we go on to the next speaker.
Sure.
Okay. We have Rob representing environmental consultancies.
Good evening. My name's Rob Miller. I'm an environmental consultant. I work for a company called RPS Group, who I'd never heard of before until I started working for them. But it turns out they're probably the biggest environmental and planning consultancy in Europe. So no one knows our name, but we work on a massive range of projects. We have more than 40 offices in the UK and throughout the world, in the Middle East, in the US and in Asia. So I was It's a big company, it's great to work for, and there's a lot of opportunities. So let's talk about my background a bit, how I got into the job, and what I would say about getting into the environmental sector. I was studied at Sheffield. I did a geography BSc. I finished with a 2-2. I didn't really know what to do, apart from become a geography teacher, which didn't really set it for me. So I figured I'd do something a bit more vocational, a bit less general, something that would give me a bit of direction. I liked physical geography. I like being outdoors. And I enjoyed learning about climate change. It's something that interests me personally. So I studied environmental management. It was a pretty suffix of in business as well. Sort of give me a bit of a focus of what I wanted to do with my career, as it were. So that included modules like these, which I presume a lot of you do similar ones, environmental impact assessment, management systems, and stuff about environmental policy, which is constantly changing. It's sort of the crux of all of the projects we do. It's like the basis of them all, so it's quite important. For me, I finished my course in July 2009. I didn't actually finish my dissertation until January 2010. I started work recently in April. With regards to that, I would say get your dissertation done, because mine dragged for months while I was trying to look for work and earn money and live. I moved to London to live the dream. Because I thought, I moved to London, that's where it is, and I'll do it. So I moved to London, had a dissertation to do. I was like, I'll do my dissertation in the day, I'll get a job, I'll earn money. Didn't work quite so well. So my dissertation struggled a bit and didn't turn out as well as I'd hoped it would. It worked all right in the end. And I didn't get a job in that time until January. I filled out copious applications, but I never really focused on it because I always had this dissertation in the back of my mind. So with regard to that, I would say, get your dissertation done, do it to the best of your ability, because that's the basis of your job search is your degree, and get it out of the way and do it as best you can. But once I'd done that and I focused my mind, I actually found a job in 2 or 3 months, and there are things out there that you can do. So applying for work, as I just said, it's great. Do it well. There's so many people trying to get an environmental job nowadays. There's so many masters, as has been said. You need to get something that stands out. If you do an undergrad, you get a 2-1, get a first. If you do a master's, can you get a merit? Can you get a distinction? It sets you a little bit higher. I've got a merit in mine. I think that actually makes a difference. It makes you makes you seem as though you're really focused on it. You care about your degree, and I think it gives you an edge. Experience in temping. It's great if you can get it. The more specific you can get your experience, the better. It gives you that extra edge. And with regard to graduate schemes, I think experience is even more important, because they don't see you as a person, they see you on a piece of paper. And if you can show that you've got experience in an environmental sector in a relevant topic, I think that's great. I personally actually didn't. And as a result, that's why I think graduate schemes didn't work for me personally. They take a lot of time. They take copious amounts of hours filling in the specific questions to their, I'm sure you've done them. And I didn't really get anywhere with graduate schemes. And with regard to that, your CV, it's. I would keep it short. If you've not got a lot of experience, try a skills CV. Keep it short, keep punching. The more you waffle, I work with one of the recruitment guys for RPS, and he'll throw a CV away in a shot if it doesn't interest him. If it buffs out, if it's too much talk in it. So keep it short, keep it to your points, keep it to your strengths, and catch someone's eye, I think, is the key for that. So thinking outside the box, quite cliche. For my job, my route into my work now, I sent respective letters, as it were, to companies. I did my research with the ENDS directory. I had reams of the specific consultancy that were vaguely interested in me, something that they had opportunities that I'd be interested in, one of which was RPS. I called, you call the recruitment manager. I said, can I please come and meet you? You've got to be face-to-face. I think that's so important. Like, it's all too easy for them to put a CV to one side, forget about it. Interested. Can I meet you for 20 minutes? I've got 20 minutes free after my lunch.
brilliant. But I lived in London and he lived north of Bristol. And I sod it, I'll do it. So I got two trains, a bus and a taxi, met him for 20 minutes north of Bristol in a business park in the middle of nowhere. 20 minutes, I walked out, that was a waste of my time. I mean, for 20 minutes he wasn't interested. But actually, it was the key to getting a job, because 3 weeks later, an opportunity came up internally. It wasn't even, it's not advertised, half the jobs aren't advertised. They're out there. He'd met me, he knew my face, he passed my CV onto the Oxford office, and I went and had an interview and got the job. So it reduced my competition immediately by meeting him, because he knew who I was. And I say in the interview, know what they do, know your stuff, know what the job is, and I think have an opinion on what you think about it is really important. People like to hear what you think. They just don't want to hear like, oh, I'll do whatever you say. And it's nice for them to hear what your opinion is, if you're passionate about it, what you think about climate change, about environmental consultancy, about what they do, about their projects, about what projects the guy's been working on. I knew who my interview was with, Googles his name, I know what he's been working on. I can say I've heard about the project you've been working on at Wembley Stadium, environmental, they've been consulting on the new Wembley, on sort of the surrounding area. So he's got a talking point, and that sort of worked quite well. So do your research and know your stuff, and yeah, say what you think. So my job at RPS now, where am I? There I am. Sort of divided into two parts. So I'm an environmental consultant, but I'm quite general. I'm not technical. I don't have an engineering or a technical background. So I do, half my job is environmental impact assessments, EIA. Well, I do them for any infrastructure. For the moment, wind farm and renewable energy schemes are the big thing. So wind farms, I've been working on maybe four or five applications for wind farms. That's a environmental statement for the most recent one we submitted on Monday. On the desk over there, so you're more than welcome to have a flick through. So it is. When I was at university, I didn't actually know. You learn all about EIA. It was a module. I didn't know what one looked like, or what it was involved, or what work was involved in it. There's also a non-technical summary, which is a summary of the hundreds of pages of A3 double-sided sheets that it is. I was involved in putting it together. So I've, on this most recent one, I've assistant project managed this one. It's for a 15 turbine wind farm scheme in South Wales. And I think it's been going through resubmissions, through public exhibitions, through all this. I think it's been going for 6 or 8 years now. And it's finally been submitted this Monday, so we had a bit of a celebration. My role is coordinating all those technical specialists that you invite to make their input. So there's 16 chapters in that statement, five introductory, and then 10 specialists. So there'll be noise, historical, archaeological, landscape and visual, has its own extra booklet, which is twice as fat. And then landscape is that fat again in another folder. So it's a lot to do, and it's a whole load of documents to go in that planning application. I think we sent out 16 copies in boxes, so big, full of papers. It's not awfully environmentally friendly, but they're CDs as well. So I help coordinate all that, working out all the figures. I don't know how many figures in there, A3 figures, doing constraints mapping for the best place positioning for all the development. And so I sort of do all of it. I'm not technical, but I'm more of a project managing role with regard to my degree, was it environmental consultancy, management in business. So far I've worked on primarily wind farm schemes, as I've said, but also from energy from waste plants, quite a big thing at the moment. And there'll be some more examples that I actually have pictures of and stuff later. Very exciting. And then the second half of my job is I do code for sustainable home assessments. So any local authority housing nowadays has to meet something that's called code level 3. So there's levels 1 to 6, with 1 being not very good and 6 being a zero carbon home, which I think there's 1 in the UK at the moment. So you'll have to meet code level 3, so there's 9 categories. It's very much a tick box exercise, and you have to get working with housing developers, on these topics. So it's energy and CO2 emissions, things like materials, water, ecological impact, all these sorts of topics, and they have to submit a certain type of information to say that they'll have regard for the environment and they'll do the certain things to reduce their impact on it. So it's the same sort of principle. They have specialists for each topic, really, and you collate that information and submit it to BRE, the Building Research Establishment, who you can type into Google and you can find reams of stuff on. It's a growing sector, I think, BRE, and more houses have to meet certain specifications nowadays. So that's the second part of my job. Perhaps not as exciting as doing the EIAs, except it's, I can say, exciting. But yeah, it's still pretty interesting. So the ones I've been involved with, energy from waste facilities, as I said, which there are photos of shortly. Bryn Hove wastewater treatment plant is sort of a state-of-the-art new wastewater treatment plant down on the south coast. That project went for over 12 years with RPS, and it's now being constructed. So there's people that have been with it since they started working at RPS, and now project managing that role. Now they're watching it being built, which is quite exciting for them. I had a little role in working on that. Onshore wind farms and cable routes for offshore farms, so where the cables come into a substation on land, after all the studies for that. Landscape and visual analysis, so we go out in the field, take panoramic photos for impact onto any sensitive receptor there might be. Solar farms, which I think will be talked about a bit more shortly, sort of an up-and-coming thing at the moment with government incentives sort of for cash for building solar farms, and they're sort of worth it economically now. And then my co-sustainable home project, something I've got 5 or 10 going at the moment. So there's a few pictures of where I've been. This is in South Wales. We went for 3 days on this site, scoping out the best position for turbines and development. We're driving around to this really nice 4x4, which unfortunately is still in that position there. A fantastic brand new car, and it's now stuck there. No, and it subsequently got quite seriously vandalised, so that wasn't our problem. This is a constraints map. So it's something we produce for every ES, environmental statement. This is all the different constraints mapping. This is a site in the middle of nowhere in Wales. And it's got a whole host of environmental regulations, environmental buffers that need to be put onto it before it's submitted and before you find the best location for your development. This is in Brighton and Hove wastewater treatment plant. It's got a state-of-the-art green roof. It's been sunk down into the ground. If you look at photo montages that we do as well in our office, you can't see it. It's almost hidden underground, apart from the one stack that comes up. So that's quite an exciting project. I've been there, I did some work on that. That's great. Offshore wind farms. As I said, we do the onshore cable routes for them. We have contracts for the Crown Estate Water, who own all of the offshore seabed throughout around the UK. And so you bid for an area. So we have a couple of those that we're doing at the moment, and we have to do the onshore cable routes for those. Energy from waste plants, as I said. This one is in Ireland. This is pumping hot water into, I honestly don't know where it is, but I know it's in Ireland. It's creating hot water and electricity for that. Solar, this is one of our projects in the bottom left corner. It's some local authority housing. They all have solar panels on. Nowadays, I think the top right is on the top of the University of Sheffield building, on the first and the university grounds. It's hydropower, something our engineers, very vast group, we've got a lot of engineers working as well. I think it's one of the initial ones in the Orkney Islands. So one of the tests. So our engineers are working on developing that and making it more commonplace. I think it's quite a positive idea for the future. So what's good about my career? What do I like about it? It's massively diverse. You can work on any project that is big enough or has a significant environmental impact, needs an environmental statement written for it, like I've got over there. So you can work on anything from Wembley Stadium to Canary Wharf, wind farms, renewable energy, literally anything. You're not stuck in an office, you're not stuck at your desk. There is report writing, it is sometimes dull. Today's been incredibly dull. But once a week, once a fortnight, I go out to site. Been on 2-3 day trips out to site. It's great. You get a good day. You can work in a variety of sectors. As we've seen, we've got three different sectors here. You can work. You can be a sustainability manager. You can be an environmental consultant. There's, I think, it's an environmental impact in everything, and it's a growing sector as well, massively. And if you actually care morally, you're having a positive environmental effect. Someone wants to build something, you have to make it better. That's your impact. You're having quite a major impact on the form of a development. And so you're actually making a change, making a difference. And personally, I like working as part of a team. In my office, I work with landscape, people, ecology, historic environment, archaeology, agriculture, all sorts, the whole range of people at RPS offer every specialist that we need to make an EIA. Negatives, I found it quite hard to think of negatives. I think you've got a job that's not really a negative. It's quite uneven. Today, you can have normal amount of work, but last week, I think I did 70-hour week because you've got to submit this environmental statement. It's got to be out on Monday. You don't have a choice. So I left the office at 10. So sometimes you've got to put in the hours. Sometimes it's a breeze and you're in the field somewhere in the middle of nowhere sitting in a nice hotel having free food. But sometimes it's really hard work. And it's constantly changed. It's not straightforward in the slightest, and there's factors out of control. So all the specialists sending their stuff into you, I don't know enough about all those chapters to correct them. So you're reliant on other people's work. And the client will call you up. I want to change this, I want to drop this turbine, I want to make them bigger. Well, so you've got to react to that. It's quite reactive and it's really changing, really exciting. So tips, finally. I asked a few of the guys in my office what their tips would be. For me, it's doing a bit extra than doing a graduate placement scheme. I say one of the other graduates in our office did a second secondment when he was doing his undergrad at RPS in Swindon, and now got the job in Oxford because they knew his face. Use the websites, use lowcarbon.com, use environmentjob.co.uk, and use the career service, I'd say. So that's me. And if you really want to ask me another question or you want to know something specific, that's my email. Anyone with a question?
What sort of training did you get from RPS, or did you use most of what you did in masters?
I'd say for my job, I've used very little of what I learned in my job. It's so generic. I did a module on environmental impact assessment. You learn everything you learn at work. I've learned 90% of what I know about what I'm doing now, I learned on the job. You get your basis of your knowledge and environmental policy and how it works through my master's, but everything else is through work at the job. So there's no specific training, and RPS don't have a graduate scheme, but it's just through doing it, really. So.
To what degree are you able to choose which contract you're working on? So if several people simply say, we want you to do this, can you choose which project you're on? Are you told?
At the moment, I do what I'm told. If someone wants me to assistant project manager job, I'm like, yes, please. That's a promotion for me. This is the first one I've done that for. And now they're saying, we'll get your own site. That'd be great if I had my own site. And so I can't really pick and choose, as it were, at the moment. But senior consultants, you bid for your work. You bid. There's websites where people put out a tender. You tender for work. So if you saw something that interested you, or you thought RPS had the capability to offer, you could offer that and say, I'm going to tender for that and put in your application for it and see if you can win it. So yeah, you do have a degree of choice.
You said that you need to know your staff and to have an opinion about it.
Yeah.
You want to impact. But again, you said that you don't really use a lot of the stuff you've learned on the course into your
work. You use it. You use the background knowledge, and you know what the new environmental policy is. But in terms of implementing it into a real environmental statement, I'd never seen an environmental statement, and the process of doing it. So I think you need to know current affairs. You need to know what the company you're working for are doing. And do you agree? Do you like what they're doing? Are you impressed? Why do you want to help them out on that? What is it about what they're doing that impresses you? I'd say is important. But you learn so much through doing the job. I think that's the key issue.
Okay, Thijs, over to you.
Okay.
So, Thijs,
thank you.
Well, hello, yes, I'm from Shah, I think we all know about the challenges, because we all know about the challenges we're facing in terms of worldwide electricity demand growing over the coming years, and what needs to be done in terms of providing for that need and doing that in a way which is... or which will be sustainable, and you've heard already in the previous talk that there's a whole range of renewable energies which can be part of that picture. And I'm going to talk today primarily about photovoltaics, so generating electricity directly from the sun, so that's the part of the renewable energy sector that I'm involved in. And I can remember very well sitting in the place where you're sitting now a few years ago during my degree, trying to think about what I like to do. So I'm going to go through what I've done since finishing my studies with the company I work for now, and so I hope that's going to be useful to you to make an informed choice. So first a bit about the company I work for. So I work for Sharp. So you may know Sharp from either the LCD televisions, the mobile phones, the calculators, the microwave ovens. So we're a very diversified electronics company, and increasingly solar electricity, so solar cells, as well as energy-saving electronics are becoming an important part of the business. So you see solar in the upper left here is small compared to the other areas, but rapidly growing part of the company. In fact, Sharp's been one of the top five producers of solar panels for at least 10 years. We've been developing them for over 50 years. So started mass production in 1963, so you can see here how the sort of amount that we're producing has increased over the years, and of course in the last 10 years it's really become a very, very big industry and consequently a big business for Sharp. So as you can see here, that's one of the things which amazed me when I joined this area of the company, that actually Sharp's been working on this for over 50 years. I had this vision to sustain research and development and small scale production for such a long time. And so now the aim of the company is to grow solar into what they call one of the pillars of Sharp, so to grow it into a big slice of Sharp's business. As I said, Sharp's been doing solar electricity for a long time. It's been recognized by awards for the research and the contributions which Sharp's made to solar cell development and commercializing the technology. And we're sort of still setting records in terms of the technologies which we're developing, so going from R&D type cells to then putting that into satellites, for example. So they're more than 100 satellites with Sharp solar cells on them now, participating in this solar car contests to sort of show off and demonstrate the latest technology. So Sharp going forward has the vision of sort of building on its expertise in solar cells and sort of go into other areas that are related to what it does well, what it knows. So not just energy creation from solar cells, but also a whole range of energy saving technologies such as LED lighting, energy saving appliances, batteries, so energy storage. So it's a whole range of technologies that the company is interested in and actively developing. So a bit about where I work. So I work in the research and development lab in Oxford here in the Science Park, just south of the city. So the lab in Oxford was one of the first overseas R&D labs of the company. So now there's six of them around the world. We're in the Oxford Science Park. There are about 120 staff members, most of them scientists and engineers, and from over 16 countries. So it's a very multidisciplinary as well as international environment. And so one of the outputs is patents, and of course and the technology that we're developing and which goes into Sharp's products. So there's a picture of the lab. We, aside from the area that I'm talking about primarily, so aside from photovoltaics, the lab works in a range of different areas of technologies, so optoelectronics, information technology, optics and displays, health and energy. There's a design center, which is working with Sharp's customers. And so most of the work that we do is done in labs on site in the building. So there's a whole range of disciplines represented in the lab, from optics, software engineering, to electrical engineering, biochemistry, software engineering, languages, mathematics, semiconductor physics, material science, chemistry, as well as engineering in general. So as I said, it's a very multidisciplinary environment as far as technical and scientific work is concerned. And so the work that we do has two aims, really. So one is to carry out research, where we have special expertise in the lab, and then the other part is to help Sharp businesses develop products for Europe. So just a bit about myself. How did I get to where I am now? So in fact, I didn't start out in renewable energy at all. I didn't even work in it until about 2 or 3 years ago. So my background is in physics. So after my PhD, I went to work for an American company for a couple of years in telecommunications R&D. And then after 2 years, I decided to come back and applied to an opening in Oxford here in Sharp Labs. So over the course of the my career at the company, I've done the whole range of different things. So when I first started, I was working on nitrides laser diodes, so where the lasers which go into Blu-ray players. So developing some very exciting technologies, was part of a team which developed that technology. Then moved into a different team working on different designs, which went into production a year ago. And for the last 2 years, I've been given the opportunity to work into an entirely different area of the lab, which is to build up a solar R&D activity in the lab in Oxford. So solar has always been big for Sharp as a company, but in the lab in Oxford, we've sort of started to build that up over the last couple of years, and so I've been involved in that, and so looking at longer-term R&D projects with a factory. So Sharp has a big factory in Wales where we manufacture panels for the European market, and as well involved in projects with the European DV business. So it's a very diverse job, so sometimes I'm meetings with the people from my team, or I'm talking to other parts of their business or colleagues in Japan, or attending conferences or workshops. And so when I started out in the lab, I was primarily involved in the research, so either in the lab or writing patents or writing publications. So it's I would say it's a very diverse job, and certainly offering many challenges, both technical as well as opportunities for learning. And perhaps what struck me especially about the Sharp compared to the other job I had is sort of how much sort of flexibility there is to move into different technical areas. So you see here, I mean, certainly I didn't have a renewable energy background as such, but I'm working in that area now, and there are sort of similar examples from the lab where people have moved from one area of technology to a different area, and sort of trying to build their expertise and build their skills while they're on the job effectively. So, so just a bit more about the environment in the lab in Oxford. So, what do we offer? So one of the keys is here. Trying to recruit the best people, so that's one of the reasons I'm here, of course. Then there's a lot of on-the-job training, not just the technical side, but also a lot of non-technical training in terms of presentation skills, project management, strategy, and so forth. And so I've been to many of these trainings, and I can say they've been really very helpful and sort of very specific to the actual work that we're doing and to the work that needs to be done. And then aside from that, of course, there's development on the job in terms of understanding what business needs are, project management, how do we transfer the technology we're developing to the factory, for example, and or secondments to other parts of the business in Europe or in Japan even. So, aside from the work aspect, I think it's a very sort of diverse environment in the lab. Many different interests. Many people are sort of very interested in sports. You can see here from cycling, triathlon, to rowing, karting. So it's very sort of fun atmosphere. Aside from the sort of focused atmosphere during the day as well. So a range of benefits which you can look up on our website if you're interested. That's sort of the summary of what I do, how I got to where I am at the moment. If you like to find out more, I've got a website you can look up. There's more detail about the lab, about Sharp. We have a credit scheme if you're interested in that, or there's a number of current vacancies, you can find the details of those on our website. If you have any questions, then of course please ask now, or if you've got any questions later, then please feel free to email us as well. Okay, thanks very much.